offering my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, I welcome you to this week's episode of the Gita series, A Triune Pilgrimage. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and my pleasure to come to you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. This is the series where we go through the Bhagavad Gita verse by verse, of course using Swami's Gita Vahini as a torchlight through which we, with the help of which we go through the Bhagavad Gita, and I think it's been a wonderful journey. As I always say, I'm eternally grateful to all of you for this opportunity to go through the Bhagavad Gita and Gita Vahini, and of course the many discourses that Swami gives on this topic. We started the fifth chapter last week. The chapter is called Sannyasi Yoga, and interestingly, much of what we have covered so far is where Krishna is hinting not at sannyasa, but to a certain extent, you can say, pointing to the direction away from sannyasa. But we'll go through all of that today. We'll go through the verses which Swami is going to describe in reply to a question that Arjuna asks, because that is the beginning of the fifth chapter. Arjuna asks a question which is very similar to the first question that he asks in the beginning of the third chapter. He says, you praise renunciation of all actions, and in the same breath you also say that karma is good. So Krishna, tell me clearly between the two, which is better? Krishna, for once, as I said, gives a very clear answer. He says the answer is in two parts. In the first part of the shloka, he says both lead to the ultimate liberation. But between the two, karma yoga and sannyasa or sankhya, he uses those words interchangeably. Krishna says karma yoga is better. We also discussed about why Krishna spoke about jnana extensively in the previous two chapters, and how is that connected to the question that Arjuna is asking and the reply that Krishna is giving. In a sense, whichever be the choice that one makes, the motive must not be dejection, sorrow, anger, revenge or any such lower emotion. The motive must be jnana. The motive must make you a mumukshu. You must be a person who craves for liberation or craves for jnana. That should be your goal in mind. And if that is the case, then karma yoga and sannyasa, as Krishna said in the third chapter, are only two nishtas or two pathways which, when adhered to with all sincerity, are going to take you to the same place. But having said that both are the same because they're going to reach you to the same goal, still Krishna says that karma yoga is better. So in what context is Krishna saying that? In what way is it better? I think those are the things which will be answered in the verses that we're going to be going through today and in the next few following weeks as well. But the takeaway for us is that it is very important for us to remember the need to pursue this knowledge. The whole of the fourth chapter, especially a huge chunk of the fourth chapter, Krishna spoke very highly of jnana and the importance of keeping that as the goal, right? Till we have a mind, till we have some sort of a craving, we are going to be seeking something or the other. And as we go through life, the priorities change, right? At a certain point, we might have been craving for something else, but we outgrow those desires and outgrow those cravings. And how do we outgrow those cravings? It is because we learn and we understand and we get better informed as we grow in age. In the similar manner, here Krishna is telling us how jnana is a better thing to pursue than anything else in the world, right? So that is how the whole topic of jnana has to be perceived. And in the backdrop of that, this choice between karma and sannyasa, as we said, it is not going to stop here. Krishna, Arjuna is going to ask these questions again and again in different forms till the last chapter. So we will go to the shlokas that we're going to go through today. We'll go through shloka number 3 of the fifth chapter first. We will listen to it in Brother Shyam's voice. I'll give you a brief meaning after we listen to the shloka, and then we will discuss in detail about what Krishna says here.
Jnyeyah sa nitya sannyasi यो न द्वेष्टि न कांक्षति निर्द्वन्द्वो हि महाबाहो सुखं बन्धात् प्रमुच्यते.
He is a true ascetic who never desires or dislikes, who is uninfluenced by the opposites and is easily freed from bondage. Before we come to discussing the shloka itself, let us probably backtrack a bit. And as I just mentioned in the brief summary that I gave you before I played that shloka, Arjuna asks which of the two, Karma Yoga and Sannyasa, is better. Krishna's answer was in two parts and absolutely direct and simple. He said, firstly, both the paths lead to liberation. The second point, between Karma Yoga and Sannyasa, karma is better or superior. Now, let us say I am in Puttaparthi, and let us say I want to reach Bangalore. And there are two routes that I can take. I can go through Penukunda or I can go through Bagepalli, right? Those are the two routes that generally we take. If I were to ask which of these two paths are better, if I were to ask that question to somebody who has traveled back and forth or who knows these paths very well, the answer would be both will lead you to Bangalore, but maybe after being told that, I will be told, you know, the route through Bagepalli is probably better. What defines a path really? It is the destination that defines the path. Now, if one of the paths that I'm talking about does not lead to Bangalore at all, then there's no point in asking this question and there's no debate about which one is better. Instantly, I will be told that, you know, don't take that route because that route doesn't go to Bangalore. So firstly, does the path take me to the destination I am trying to reach? That's the first question. And that is the first thing that defines the path. But when both paths take me to the destination that I want to reach, if I say one route is better than the other, then that choice must be based on certain parameters. Maybe the road is better in one route, or one is shorter than the other, or sometimes there are some, you know, more toll gates, and so one of the routes becomes more expensive. So based on, or maybe based on my commute, whether I'm traveling alone by my own car or I'm going by public transport, somebody will tell me which one is better. So the point is, when both means lead to the same goal, and still we say one is better than the other, that choice or that advice is very subjective. I might want a faster route. That makes one better than the other. Or I might want a more scenic drive. So that makes one path better than the other for me. Or, you know, it could be based on what I like or want, or based on my abilities. If you ask me, I'm always bad with routes. So I always prefer a route that is straightforward, even if it's going to take me more time. I would rather take a route which has got lesser, you know, turnings and everything, and it's always sticking to the main road, the highway. I would probably prefer a route like that. So to Arjuna's question, Krishna says both Karma Yoga and Sannyasa will lead you to liberation, but Karma Yoga is better. So on what basis is Krishna advising Arjuna that one of these paths is better? One could be that the advice is for Arjuna the individual. For Arjuna who is asking the question, Krishna might be saying that for you, Karma Yoga is better. Of course, it has not been worded that way, but that could be one of the things that Krishna is trying to convey. If that is the case, then we will have to analyze why is it better for Arjuna the individual, and will that apply to me as an individual, right? It might be an advice that is given, which is given only to Arjuna, but can I analyze and say that, am I a person who is also like Arjuna, who also needs this advice? Or it could be that one of the paths are more difficult and the other one is simpler than the other. And if that is the case, I think again we'll have to analyze what do we mean by difficult? What is it that makes the path difficult? As I said, if one path is more expensive, for somebody to take a longer route is a torture. For somebody, giving more money is a torture, right? So if we say that one is better than the other. We have to find out in what way is it better, and again see that, does that apply to me? Does that apply to my mindset? And that is why we say that this is what, this is a subjective suggestion that Krishna is giving, and that is why it needs to be analyzed. And I feel that is why these questions that Arjuna is asking are very important. See, he has already told Krishna that I will do whatever you tell me. So Arjuna knows that he has to fight because Krishna has already hinted that. And right in the beginning, Krishna has said that you have to get up and fight, and he's been repeating that over and over again. So Arjuna knows that he has to fight, and probably Arjuna also knows that he is going to follow whatever Krishna says. But him asking these questions to get some clarity is going to help us understand what is the right path for us. So this is the first verse where Krishna starts explaining this question that Arjuna has asked. He says, Nyeyaha, it should be known, Yaha, who, na dveshti, does not hate, na kankshitaha, nor desires, sa nitya sannyasi, such a person is a nitya sannyasi. He says, the one who does not hate and the one who does not desire, such a person is a nitya sannyasi. Now Krishna uses the term nitya sannyasi. This is one more way of saying that one who has no raga and dvesha is a nitya sannyasi. We will come to that. In the next line he says, Mahabaho, O mighty armed one, O Arjuna, Nirdvandvaha, one free from the pairs of opposites, that is raga and dvesha, likes and dislikes, sorrow and happiness, he verily sukham bandhat pramuchyate, is set free from bondage easily. So this, what Krishna is saying, is not new. He has been saying this over and over again, that when one transcends the dualities or of likes and dislikes, one becomes free. But him repeating it here may be of a specific relevance, and that is what we'll have to look at a little more keenly. And also the use of the term nitya sannyasi instead of just saying sannyasi, that also needs to be discussed. As we had discussed last week, there are two types of sannyasas. One is the renunciation or sannyasa that comes after jnana is acquired, which is referred to as vidvat sannyasa. And the other is the sannyasa that is taken up as a process, as a path by itself, and that is called vividisha sannyasa. So this term nitya sannyasi could probably be a reference to vidvat sannyasa. If I am a sannyasi by choice, I can probably change my path anytime later, a few years down the line. In which case, I cannot be called a nitya sannyasi or an eternal renunciant. But if something has changed fundamentally within me, and I don't have that nature or prakriti to be attached to objects and people anymore, then I become a sannyasi who is incapable of getting tangled in the world, and I become a nitya sannyasi. And this occurs only after jnana is attained. So it is understood that such a person who has attained jnana, who becomes a nitya sannyasi, is beyond likes and dislikes. Another way of probably explaining this nitya sannyasi is simply to say, a true sannyasi who continues to remain a renunciant even if he appears to be performing karma, right? So that nitya sannyasi may connote that whether he is acting or if he is sitting silently, if he is in the world or he is not in the world, it doesn't matter. He is always a sannyasi whether or not he appears like one. That could be one of the meanings or connotations of nitya sannyasi. And that also I think is a pretty agreeable explanation. But the most important point is, Krishna is defining a sannyasi as one who is beyond likes and dislikes. Especially the words he uses in this shloka, na dveshti, na kankshati. He does not hate, nor does he crave for. So from this we could say that sannyasa is not a path that must be taken because you hate something or you desire something. It's a path that must be taken because to a great extent you don't like anything more than the other. In other words, there is no the difference between what you like and what you don't like. The strong liking and the strong disliking is beginning to vanish. Here, if you look at Arjuna's case, Arjuna is purely considering sannyasa because of his strong dislikes and likes that have arisen in his mind, right? He very strongly does not like the idea of participating in the battle. So for this problem or attachment, the path of sannyasa is probably not the way. And this is one understanding we can come to. I hope I've made myself clear. This is purely based on what Krishna is telling in this particular shloka. He says, a nitya sannyasi is defined by somebody who does not have very strong likes or strong desires. So if I'm a person who is not yet a nitya sannyasi and I am debating whether I should become a sannyasi or I should continue with karma yoga, like in the case of Arjuna, if this choice is being propelled by any strong desire or any strong dislike, probably the choice that you make could be flawed, just like in the case of Arjuna here. So even if what Krishna is telling is specific to Arjuna, we can see why this is not good for Arjuna and we can extrapolate that idea. And if you remember in the third chapter, Krishna clearly explains that for those of us who have strong likes and dislikes, the best way to overcome them is to follow Swadharma. A very important part of the third chapter was about this, right? He says, perform actions according to your duties, try not to be attached to the results, and offer whatever you do to me. This, Krishna said, is probably the best for anyone who is still in the strong grasp of raga and dvesha. And Krishna had explained, such a person is under the influence of the guna of rajas, and this expresses itself as desires and later as anger and delusion and so on, right? That beautiful shloka which was there. That is clearly the status that Arjuna is in and probably most of us are in. So under what circumstances does sannyasa become not so advisable to the aspirant? When the thought of sannyasa is born out of any of these rajasic emotions of anger, hatred, disgust, virakti, any unpleasant occurring has happened and that turns you away from everything. Any of these spikes in emotions which are a result of the rajasic guna cannot be, if the choice of sannyasa comes out of that, probably we can say that it's not the right thing to do. Or sometimes even strong momentary fancies. You know, we see one drama or a movie of a life of a saint and we instantly feel that, hey, I know I also have to renounce everything and I need to follow this path. Or, as I said, when you're struggling in samsara and you see some sannyasi living very happily, one day you just go to Rishikesh or some place like that and you find these sannyasis living there and you say, my God, I'm struggling to make my ends meet and I'm struggling to keep my family together, my corporate life, and look at these people, they're living such a happy life. And seeing such a thing or witnessing something or experiencing something like that, we may have a desire for the same freedom. So sannyasa becomes a difficult path or a dangerous path if taken up based on these fancies or some emotional ups and downs, typically based on the emotion of rajas, which shows up, as Krishna said, as strong desires and strong dislikes. Then when can we take up sannyasa? If anyone is having that in mind, and when is it a right choice to make, or when is choosing sannyasa is the right thing? Well, that is not the theme of this portion, so we will probably not dwell too much into it. But let me just reiterate a point that I had made earlier, and we will probably stop with that. We will not go too much into which individual amongst us is qualified to take up a life of a sannyasi. Now, when Krishna was speaking about the concept of inner prakriti or nature of a person, and that prakriti guiding all the actions and the choices that person makes, almost like a remote control. You know, we had seen how this nature is formed. How is this prakriti formed in the first place? It is based on how we have led lives in the past. If we have had strong cravings for money and we have constantly gone after it, we've made all choices and we've put all our time and energy into that, that becomes one of the strong tendencies which will become a part of our prakriti and which will show up as a strong ambition in the next birth. But if we have had such experiences that have made us feel that earning money is not important, or, you know, what is the point in gathering so many friends and achieving so much in the world? All of this is pointless. If our experiences have been like that, probably that vairagya or detachment will become a part of that prakriti and will start surfacing in the next birth. So maybe those for whom sannyasa is the right path is such kind of people. They will have a very natural inclination towards such a life. They may be born in such families, they may be probably born into such circumstances where it is very common for people to take up, that sort of a lifestyle, right? As I said, this is not part of the discussion at this point, though the chapter is called Sannyasa Yoga, it is not part of the discussion right now. We'll see if it comes later in the chapter, we'll discuss about that. The bottom line here is, Krishna says, true sannyasa comes when one has overcome the dualities. But earlier he had said, for those with strong likes and dislikes, the path of karma yoga is better. In what way is it better? It may be easier, or is it shorter, or does it mean that it has lesser pitfalls? Well, we'll have to look at that. But for now, at least Krishna has made it very clear that karma yoga is better than sannyasa. But he has not made it very clear whether it is only for Arjuna or it is for everyone. And that is what has given us the scope to discuss about it. And that was the analysis that we did. We'll go to the next shloka, where, as I said, in the next few shlokas, the same theme continues. But in different ways, Krishna puts it. And I think each one of the shloka is important in its own way. And we will discuss it in detail. So we'll go to the next shloka, which is shloka number 4 of chapter 4. We'll listen to it and then we'll discuss in detail.
Sankhya yoga prathak balah pravadanti na panditah ekamapyastitha samyag ubhayor vindate phalam.
The childish and not the wise proclaim the paths of knowledge and the yoga as different. He who has properly resorted to even one of these two gets the fruit of both. So that is the fourth shloka of chapter number 4. Once it so happened that Swami had come to the higher secondary school in Prashanthi Nilayam, and there was an exhibition that the students had set up, and those were the golden days when Swami would come to the schools and hostels for every event in every festival and every such demonstration by the students. And so there was, I think, a science exhibition or whatever art exhibition, and Swami had come to look at all the displays and models. Brother Sai Prakash, our senior from Radio Sai, with whom I've had the opportunity to do a few programs like Shravanam and Nidhyasanam and so on, he would often narrate this beautiful episode that happened when Swami had come for that exhibition, and I'm sure he must have mentioned it in the other shows too. So he had made this model, and that model basically consisted of three separate models, right? There was one model of a bullock cart, there was another model of a car, and the third one was of a aeroplane. So Swami came to where he was standing with his model, and Swami looked at him and said, you know, what is all this about, and explain to me. And Sai Prakash started telling Swami, these are the three pathways to God. He said, Swami, this is the bullock cart. If bullock cart is like the karma yoga, he said, it is slow and it takes more time to reach. The car is like the bhakti marga, and the aeroplane is like the jnana marga. You know, it reaches you to the destination the fastest. Swami looked at all of this and he said, oh, it's very nice. Then Swami said, but see, if you fall from the plane, you will be completely finished. Hinting that it does seem like the best path, but one cannot say that it is the safest. If you fall off from the bullock cart, probably you're going to sustain lesser injuries, but if you fall off from the aeroplane, then probably you'll be out of action for a very, very long time, right? But the fact is, the nature of obsession is itself such that if someone comes and tells us what we are trying to achieve is going to be difficult, I think that is not enough to turn us away from that pursuit. It happens with all of us, especially when we are obsessed or when you're passionate about something. Right? Let's say I'm a youngster and I want to become a cricketer. When I'm growing up in India, and almost every other kid plays cricket, and every other kid who plays cricket wants to become a cricketer, a professional cricketer. And at that time, parents and elders will come and tell them, you know, it's probably not a very good idea. You know how difficult it is to become a cricketer. You have to work very hard. It's better that you concentrate on your studies and, you know, you play cricket, but, you know, don't think about taking it as a profession. You know, when such an advice is given, that will have a least effect on a person who is very passionate about a game like cricket or passionate about music. Because when you tell them that it's going to be difficult, and when you're obsessed with that idea, when you're filled with that passion, you will only think that it's okay. If it's difficult, I'll work harder. And, you know, it being difficult is not enough reason for me to give it up, right? That's the first response that will be for a person who is very passionate about something, right? So if Krishna is going to say to Arjuna, sannyasa is going to be very tough, that is not something that will turn Arjuna away, right? If the same example that I had given, if Krishna had told, you know, oh, it's going to be very tough, it is like falling off the aeroplane or something like that, Arjuna would have said that, you know, something being tough cannot turn me away. In fact, you know, Arjuna is a prince. Being a prince, he has managed to live for 12 years in the forest. So he's not someone who's scared of a tough life. So telling him that sannyasa is going to be tough will not turn him away. That is why Krishna in this shloka and the few shlokas that follow, he's going to reiterate the point that the two paths are actually not different at all. They are one and the same. Karma Yoga and Sannyasa are inseparable. Who is a sannyasi today may become a samsari tomorrow. Who is treading the path of Karma Yoga in this birth may become a sannyasi in the next birth. So though it appears to be a very critical choice, almost like a career choice that we will have to stick to for the rest of our lives, they are one and the same. And probably they are more interconnected and interrelated than we can imagine. And that is what Krishna reiterates in the shloka. He says, Sankhya Yoga, Sankhya and Yoga. Just to remind you again, wherever Krishna says Sankhya, it means pursuing jnana one-pointedly, giving up all the other obligations of bodily relationships, where the lifestyle is that of a sannyasi. When he says Yogi, it means one who pursues knowledge, performing one's obligations as a sadhana, which is a karma yogi. So he says, Sankhya Yoga, Sankhya and Yoga. Again, it is not Sankhya Yoga. The usage of the word Yoga suggests that it is Sankhya and Yoga. So he says, Sankhya Yoga, Pritak Pravadanti, are spoken of as distinct. Balaha, by children, not children in age, but children in understanding. So those who are ignorant and immature, Sankhya Yoga Prithak Pravadanti Balaha. It is only the childish that speak of Sankhya and Karma as being separate or distinct. Na Panditaha, not the learned ones. It is only those who are immature speak like this. Na Panditaha, not the learned ones. Ekam api astithaha. Even if a person is established in one of these, ekam api astithaha. Samyaka, properly, right? Again, it's a reiteration of that point. Both are pathways. One has to be sincere in whatever one takes up, either sannyasa or karma yoga. So he says, ekam api Astitah samyakah. Even if a person is established in any one of these truly or properly, vindate phalam, obtains the fruit, ubhayoho, of both. So he says, in any one of the paths, if you are able to stick to it, you will get the fruits of this path as well as the other path. There is nothing like you will be excluded from achieving a certain thing. If you take Karma Yoga, you will be excluded from achieving something if you take up Sannyasa. What we'll do is we'll go to the next shloka, that is shloka number 5, because a very similar point is being conveyed even there. And we'll listen to that shloka, we'll discuss about this one and the shloka that we just heard, both of that together after we listen to that.
Yat sankhyaih prapyate sthanam tad yogairapi gamyate ekam sankhyam cha yogam cha yah pashyati sa pashyati.
The state that is reached by the Sankhyas, that is reached by the yogis as well. He sees, who sees Sankhya and Yoga as one. As I said, the same point is being reiterated again. There Krishna said, those who see them as different are children in their understanding. Here he puts it in a little more poetic fashion. He says, ekam sankhyam cha yogam cha. Sankhya and yoga are one. Yah pashyati, sa pashyati. One who sees this, he alone sees. Meaning to consider sannyasa and karma yoga as being different is equivalent to being blind. So though Krishna acknowledged that from a certain point of view, these two are different paths, and from a certain point of view, Karma Yoga is better than Sannyasa. From what point of view are they different? They are different lifestyles. They are different nishtas. And from that point of view, they may be different, but the wise see them as being one. A wise person will not be fooled by the differences in appearances, right? The best example that I can think of giving you is, let's say, there is a particular species of a plant or a tree, and, you know, depending on where that particular species grows, there are some subspecies and things like that, where they might appear different. And for a very casual person who looks at them, we might think that they are two different trees or two different plants. But for a person who is very knowledgeable, who is well informed in that subject, let's say if I'm a botanist, I will know that though they appear different, though they are growing in different places, in different conditions, I will not be fooled by the difference in the external appearance. I will be able to look at it and say that, no, this belongs to the same species, or this belongs to the same genus, or how that goes. So if I'm more informed, I will be able to look past the physical distinction, the apparent differences, and say that they are one. In the same way, these two lifestyles, Karma Yoga and Sannyasa, may appear different. As a Karma Yogi, one has to fend for the family, so has to dress up in an appropriate fashion and according to the circumstances. If you're going for work, you have to dress up in a certain way. If you're doing something for the family, you'll have to do it in a certain way. But if one becomes a sannyasi, one has to dress in a different way. So it's a different lifestyle altogether. So the appearances, the duties, the commitments, these may be different, but what is the essence of both? Both a sannyasi and a karma yogi are spiritual aspirants seeking the same goal. From that point of view, there is no difference. And not only what they seek is the same, but what they attain eventually also is the same. And I think that is the most important point. Both might be seeking the same thing, but are they both attaining the same thing? Krishna made it very clear that both attain the same thing. In fact, the Karma Yogi attains the benefit that a Karma Yogi gets and a Sannyasi gets. Similarly, a Sannyasi also attains the benefit the Karma Yogi gets as well as the Sannyasi gets. Yat Sankhyaihi Prapyate. that which is reached by Sankhyas, tat, that, yogaihi api gamyate, even the karma yogis reach the same. So the same thing he is reiterating even in the shloka. Yat sankhyaihi prapyate, that which is reached by the Sankhyas, tat yogaihi api gamyate, even the karma yogis reach the same. Of course, the usage of the words prapyate and gamyate is very interesting here. Though both connote the same thing, there is a slight difference between the two. Prapyate can be more accurately translated as achieved or acquired, and gamyate is more accurately translated as reached. So it may appear that the Sankhyas are one-pointedly pursuing jnana, while the karma yogi is doing this, you know, typical act of balancing the different duties and, you know, that we spoke about swadharma, how that is very difficult to ascertain what is my duty at every point in time. So it might appear that karma yogi is filled with all of these duties around him and him or her, and is trying to balance all of these duties, whereas a sankhya or a sannyasi is one-pointedly pursuing jnana. So in the case of a sankhya, the word prapyate is used, which means he acquires what he is after. Karma yogi, the word gamyate is used. Though it may not appear that this person is also pursuing that one-pointedly, he eventually reaches there, almost like in the course of the journey of life, he reaches that same place. So, yata sankhyahi prapyate, that which is acquired by the sankhyas, tata yogaihi api gamyate, the karma yogis also eventually reach there. So, Krishna is making it very clear to Arjuna. If not anything, there is no reason not to consider karma yoga in par with sannyasa. He is not saying anything against sannyasa. I think that is a very important point to remember from whatever we've been saying. He is not dismissing sannyasa. Krishna is not saying anything to put down sannyasa, but is saying that karma yoga is in no way lesser than sannyasa. Arjuna has two options before him, either to perform actions as a yogi or to give up actions as a sannyasi. So when he is about to make that choice, on the basis of what is he making that choice? Krishna is telling him, if you think one will take you to the goal and the other will not, then you're mistaken. If you think one was created by me and the other was not created by me, again you're mistaken, because that is what Krishna made very clear in the beginning of the fourth chapter by saying, I only taught this method to the Rajarishis starting from Sun God. If you think that doing Karma Yoga you reach a different state compared to a sannyasi, then again you are mistaken, because yata sankhyahi prapyate tat yogaihi api gamyate. The same that is acquired by the sankhyas is acquired even by the yogis. So on what basis is Arjuna choosing sankhya over yoga? On the basis that he doesn't feel like fighting, right? So it is purely a case of liking one thing more than the other. So you can say that it is an uninformed decision being taken, driven by the moment's likes and dislikes. And that's the whole point why, probably as we just discussed, why for Arjuna it is not probably the right thing to do. And if at all we are in a similar situation, faced with a similar choice, to choose sannyasa over karma is probably wrong if we are in a very similar situation. So it is a misinformed or uninformed decision that Arjuna is making. What are those important information that Krishna is giving? Just what I mentioned, both the paths are going to take you to the same thing. It is not that one is lesser than the other. It is not that one is holier than the other, because both of them have been created by me. They are two pathways. In the beginning of the third chapter, that's what he said. He said, both of these are pathways created by me. And again, in the fourth chapter, he says, I only gave this knowledge to Vivaswan. Right? So Krishna is removing all of the things that we might use to distinguish between these two pathways. So Krishna is giving Arjuna all the information required to now make the informed decision. In fact, luckily for us, through Arjuna, he is giving all these information to us so that we can make an informed decision. So these are the different things. I mean, the point that we should never forget at this thing is sannyasa is not being put down, right? In fact, he's bringing both to the same level, right? That's something that we have to always keep in mind. But the intention behind the choice is what makes one better than the other. We will go to the sixth shloka. We'll, I think, have enough time to cover that. We will go through that and we'll see, again, as I said, it's again a continuation of the same theme where Krishna is saying that one is as good as the other. And in a very subtle sense, without saying it, he's saying why one is better than the other.
Sannyasastu Mahabaho Dukkhamaptumayogatah Yoga Yukto Munir Brahma Nachirenadhi Gacchati.
O mighty armed Arjuna, renunciation is certainly hard to attain, accepting through yoga. The sage who is the master of yoga attains the Brahman before long. As I just mentioned, in this portion, so far Krishna has not put down sannyasa. In fact, there is nothing to put down. He is saying karma yoga and sannyasa is equally glorious as long as the aspirant is sincere on the path, the aspirant has his or her eyes fixed on jnana. But in the third chapter, a little bit, Krishna had hinted how karma yoga is better than sannyasa. He had said that even a sannyasi has to at some point or the other, in some form or the other, perform karma. If not for anything, at least to take care of one's own body, karma has to be performed. And maybe even some religious activities or spiritual activities, you know, because even sannyasis have to do certain prayers and obligations and oblations and all of that. So even if you become a sannyasi, there is no way that karma can be completely given up, right? This is a refresher of what we went through in the third chapter. So activity can never be given up. Even a jnani has to perform activities, and said even an avatar who comes down has to perform activities. So action is something that can never be removed from the equation. So learning to deal with karma is almost like an essential life skill. And that is why even sannyasa needs this particular life skill. And in that sense, you can say karma yoga is better because it becomes the foundation even for sannyasa. To say better probably is still not correct, but it is essential. It is important. Because even as a sannyasi, you will use the tools that you acquire, use the learnings that you acquire in the process of karma yoga. Now in this verse, Krishna is emphasizing that particular point. He says, Tu, but, Mahabaho, O mighty armed one, O Arjuna, Sannyasaha, renunciation, Dukkham Aptum, is hard to attain, ayogataha, without yoga or without karma yoga. So without the training of karma yoga, even sannyasa becomes difficult. Because the lifestyles are different, the motives are the same. Even as a sannyasi, the same mind has to be tackled, right? Just because one becomes a sannyasi or one becomes a karma yogi, the mind does not completely change. Of course, if the prakriti itself is different, and that's why I made that point, who is qualified to become a sannyasi, if at all one is, that is, if one's prakriti itself is different, one's likes and dislikes itself is very different, and, you know, there are different probably ways of identifying or checking if one is ready for that path, right? And that's not, it's not part of the syllabus right now, so we'll not worry ourselves with that. But it's the same mind that has to be tackled, whether one chooses to become a sannyasi or a karma yogi. And that way of tackling the mind is better learnt as a karma yogi. In the past, there used to be this practice which most of the kings, especially in India, would follow. And if you read some of these mythological stories or Indian stories for children, you will always find this. The king of the land, the emperor, who will always want to know what is the true state of the kingdom and how is the kingdom being run and how the ministers and how the officials treating the citizens. Are the citizens safe? You know, what would they do? They would go incognito. They would dress up as a common man and they would go into the public probably during the day or during the night and would try to figure out if everything is going smoothly in the kingdom. And why would they do that? You want to know how really a common man is treated by the officials and by other common men. Then you will have to go in the garb of that common man. If you were to go as a king in his regal clothes, the way that person will be treated will be completely different. So it doesn't, there's no point in that. The purpose will not be served. Somewhat in a similar manner, the whole idea of spirituality is to sublimate all the qualities that are born out of ego, like anger, jealousy, hatred, greed, and so on, the Arshadvargas. So whether I am a sannyasi, or I am a householder, if I want to be spiritual, I have to destroy these same inner enemies or Arshadvargas. It's not a different enemy that I'm going to face. It's the same enemies in the mind that I have to battle. But the moment I wear this garb of a sannyasi, the way the world treats me is going to completely change. Their expectations are going to change. The way I'm going to live my life is going to be changed. So going through life and performing karma yoga will be different from living like a sannyasi, even though it is only a change of garb. The way the world will treat you will completely change. And in that change, probably few of the processes that help me to deal with these inner enemies will probably be taken away in the path of sannyasa. And somebody had very beautifully said, you know, going through life and performing karma yoga or performing the various duties of our life, interacting with others in the corporate world or interacting with our own family members or our neighbors and everything, it is almost like when you want to polish marbles, they would say you put all the marbles in a bag and you start shaking them together. In that process, they rub against each other and that itself will lead to the marbles being polished, right? So as a sannyasi, it is like taking that one marble and putting it aside and saying that I will polish this marble separately. Or you're saying that you have 100 marbles and each one of those marbles I will separately polish. That is going to be that much more difficult, that much more cumbersome, right? So that is what Karma Yoga does. So the same mind has to be dealt with. And Swami would often say this, you know, you want to get rid of anger. If you are not in situations where you are made angry, you probably will not know that that is a flaw in you that needs to be dealt with. If you're never in the midst of luxury and in the midst of people who are probably leading a better life than you are, and you are not sensing the jealousy rising from inside, you probably will not know that that flaw is there in you and it needs to be tackled. You are only taking yourself away from that situation and you are removing that opportunity of that sensation or that emotion rising in you, and you are not giving yourself the opportunity to deal with that, right? So in that sense, if you look at it, the advantages of leading a normal life, what Krishna is asking Arjuna to do, you know, there's this duty in front of you, do it. This will give you a certain training in your mind and this is essential for you. This will help you out. This will be missing. So he does not say that it is impossible, because that is why he makes it very clear, even through the path of sannyasa, you will gain what is gained through the path of karma yoga, and through the path of karma yoga, you will gain what is gained through path of sannyasa. So be it jnana, be it detachment, or be it the equanimity of mind, all of these things which we hold as important things in the spiritual path, they can be gained through the two. But in this sense, probably one is more difficult than the other. It's almost like the difference between, as I always like to say, homeschooling and going through a regular school. What is the advantage of putting a child through a regular school? One is, of course, everything is taken care of. You know, there is a time for play, there's a time for practicals, there's a time for theory, there's a time for art, there's a time for music. You don't have to worry about any of those things. And more importantly, the child is put through a schooling regimen by which the child interacts with other children. So the child learns to become competitive, the child learns to become caring and sharing, and all of those things automatically is learnt in that process of sending a child to a school. Now, if you look at school as only meant to make the child more intelligent or more learned, you could put the same child through homeschooling. You know, the same subjects, the same topics, probably you could even stuff more knowledge into the child through homeschooling. But there are a lot of these other life skills which are not learned. It is not that they will not be learned in the process of homeschooling, but then it becomes the onus of the person who is putting the child through the homeschooling to ensure that whatever is missed out in that regular schooling is also learned. Right? It becomes all the more difficult. And typically, a sannyasi is, you know, needs much, much more self-discipline. If somebody is going through a regular life, if you're working in a company or if you're the head of a family, automatically the responsibilities that are put on you makes you lead a disciplined life. You have to wake up at a certain time, you have to do a certain thing, you're answerable to certain people. That will automatically bring a sense of discipline into your life. But if you are choosing to lead a life of literally taking a marble and keeping it aside separately, then all of this has to be learnt by oneself. So which means it calls for enormous amount of self-discipline. Well, all of this has not yet been told by Krishna in the shlokas that we've gone through, but through the few statements that he's making, probably we can muse all this. So thinking of all of this from the point of view of Arjuna, Arjuna does not have the benefit of 1 hour of the Gita series where we sit and think of all of this, or the benefit of going through the other discourses of Swami where Swami mentions all of these things. He's only listening to what Krishna is saying. So from what Krishna is saying, he's making it very, very clear. Both paths lead you to the same goal. There is actually no difference in that sense, because if you look at the tattva, if you remove the name and the form, both are the same, because both are pathways which will take you to jnana. So in that sense, both are same. So he's removing this idea that one is more special or one is better than the other, so that the choice becomes more clearer, right? That's probably how we make choices in life too. If we have make a choice between two business proposals, we literally strip it down to the basics and say that, okay, now let me see which one is better for me, right? And you should remove all the layers and layers of imaginary things that this is better, that is better, or some things will be marketed differently even when we are procuring new equipment for the studio. That's something which we do, because people will always put in more features into things which we probably will not know. And when you're going there into the market, you get carried away by all of that. So you have to bring back all the proposals and you say that, okay, these are things I'll probably never use, and these are the things which is most important. And that's how you strip down all the paraphernalia and come to the essence and saying that, okay, now this is what I need to do. Krishna is doing that for Arjuna. He's saying that, you know, forget all the fancy that you have about this kind of a lifestyle. Forget all of the fancy that the society itself has. You know, probably it celebrates a sannyasi more than someone like a warrior. So all of these fancies are being removed by Krishna, and he's saying that in essence, if you are seeking jnana, which you ought to be seeking, both of these are suitable. And being that as it may, what is the state you are in? What is the state your mind is in? Looking at that, Krishna is saying that karma yoga is better. And analyzing that, I leave it for each one to decide what is the best path for them. Right? In fact, Swami has very, very clearly said on more than one occasions that the path that he would suggest in general, right? Individually, there might be different people to whom Swami has given different guidance, but in general, Swami would often say that I would always suggest the path of hands in the society, head in the forest. Especially for this Kali Yuga, Swami would say, that is the best thing or the best path. That doesn't mean that the other path does not lead you to the goal. In different ways, one is better than the other, and some of the points we had discussed. So we'll conclude with that. We'll continue with this. This discussion is going to continue, and in many ways you can see that these are all repetitions of the same thing. Krishna is also repeating the same things. Arjuna is also repeating the same questions, because that's how the mind works. The mind is not satisfied by the answer being given once, right? These are all things that have to be reiterated to the mind again and again. The mind will keep asking the same questions. The same answers have to be given in different forms, just like how Krishna is doing to Arjuna. So we'll continue this next week. Till then, thank you for joining me. Do join me again next week at 7:30 p.m. for the resumption of the Gita series, The Triumph Pilgrimage. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu and his team for the last segment of today's Thursday Live, the Vahini Satsang. Till I meet you all next week, take care. Jai Sai Ram.